All right, everyone. I'm really excited for this episode. I have David Burgess here, who is a franchisee with Caring Senior Service. David, thanks for hopping on, man.
Thanks, Tark. Good to be here.
Yeah, awesome. So, man, you're a super successful franchisee, which I just love talking to franchisees like you. You were telling me some stats the first time that we talked in terms of like where you are and where you rank in the franchise. We just hit on that for a second because I think it's a solid frame for people to understand like who the message is coming from.
Great. Yeah, that's a good question. The company itself doesn't really, they focus so much more on achievement and about providing great care, which is our moniker, the standard of service, but they do have some ranking sort of information. I started 6 years ago from scratch with no experience in the industry and no contacts in the industry by myself. And this is the beginning of my seventh year. I think last year I was in the top 25% of 50-plus offices nationwide. So we're pretty proud of that. I've got to credit my team for a lot of it.
Yeah, that's amazing. What? How does that... How does that feel? I mean, I know it's not about the external ranking, right? Of like, okay, we're top 25%. I mean, you know, getting to know you, what's important is providing the service and what you do. We'll dive in more to that and how you're impacting people's lives. But how does that feel to go from having, you know, been in the corporate world, right? And then, you know, made the leap on the other side and now to have a successful, thriving business? Like, what does that feel like?
It's a tremendous experience. It's really something I wondered whether I would ever achieve. I'm 57 years old now. When I was 49, almost 50, I decided that I'm a great manager in multiple areas. I have property management interests, but I don't have this passion for what I'm selling. I put deals together, but it just didn't mean that much to me other than generically. And I thought, you know, how can I put my skills together in a way that's really going to mean something? And there's a whole story about it, background, but I was very close with my grandmother, spent a lot of time with her, and I realized that person helping her at the end of her life changed everything for her, and I decided, long story short, to purchase and open my own home care franchise. And I look back and think I was crazy, but it was probably the best thing I ever, it was definitely the best thing I ever did.
Yeah. You know, it's there's a phrase that a lot of that exists in the business and personal development world, which is, what would you do if you knew you couldn't fail? And hindsight is 20/20, right? Now that you're sitting here and you're 7 years into your business and you've built a robust, you know, business, it's easy to look back, right, and go, okay, that was a good decision. But can you rewind and take us back to, like, do you remember what you were feeling during that period of time where you were exploring it and going, like, do I want to do this? Were you scared? Were you nervous? Like, what was coming up for you? And did you almost not do it?
That's such a great question. How long do we have today? No, I'll keep the stories short. It was all of it. It was an amazing experience. I thought I was going to quit three times. I felt like I'd hit a stone wall 10 times. It was probably a 9-month process. You know, learning, I thought I knew what I was talking about, knew what I was doing. And then I realized, oh my gosh, I hadn't considered all of these things, but I kept with it. And I always remembered that, you know, nothing good comes easy. And, you know, I learned from being a tennis player and playing tennis tournaments that if you push just a little more, you're going to succeed. You're going to get there. You're going to get the break in that set and you're going to win. And it really worked here, too. I mean, I'm so glad I didn't quit, and I looked for resources and people to, you know, help me. But at some point, you know, I also learned the psychological axiom, I can't remember what it is, you can never get enough information. At some point, you have to garner everything that you have, look at it, and there's always going to be a leap of faith involved. In fact, if my experience is if there's not a leap of faith, it's probably not the right. You've got to be in a position where it's a little bit scary, or maybe a lot scary.
Yeah, that's such a good point, because I remember when my wife and I were pulling the trigger on our franchise, and it was terrifying. It was We took out a $300,000, over a $300,000 line of credit on our house to open a juice and smoothie bar, which just seemed like a wild kind of idea. And for me, I was so scared. You know that term, hanging on for dear life? That's kind of what it felt like for me. That it was, what's so many successful people wind up succeeding. Maybe you can relate to this because of fear. Like, fear is such a motivating factor. Can you relate to that at all? Was that like a big driver for you in the beginning?
Yes. And I again, it brings me back to my background as a tennis coach and tennis player. Fear can be the best motivator ever. Fear of loss, of my investment, of looking bad, of risking my finances, my reputation, everything. All those fears keep you up at night. But and those are true, and you can use those in a positive way. But what has to be stronger is your desire to win, your a motivation for doing this. Oh my gosh, I want to bring the joy and peace that my grandmother had with Alana, who became part of the family with this service in Florida, she had, to other people. Don't forget my mission. And that I had to realize that what I wanted to, using my gifts such as they are in this way, was the best thing to do, and I could really make a difference. That's my fear. That's my desire to win, overcoming my fear of loss. But they both play a part.
Yeah, that's... They do. They really do both play a part. So, like, take us back. I'm curious to, like, take us back to what you were doing prior to buying your franchise. And maybe even more important than what you were doing, what was that why for you that gave you the courage and the desire to pursue this crazy idea based on, like, what you were experiencing in the corporate world?
It just wasn't very satisfying. I had, a lot of people would love to have the job that I had and everything, but I went to work every day and I knew it was going to be the same. I knew even if I succeeded that week or that month and made the quota, that it's never good enough. It's never going to be what it needs to be. I was chronically dissatisfied, and that was leading to bad things in my personal life, being depressed, being lack of motivation, feeling then the fear stokes. What am I going to do in 5 years? I don't want to be doing this. And it all kind of crystallized into forming a plan, doing my research, painfully. And there's all kinds of funny stories as part of how I got there, but really sticking with it, putting aside, 4 hours a weekend to research and make new contacts and talk to people that understood business and starting businesses and did the wherewithal. Our founder, Jeff Salter, said something once. He says, you have to have, this is after I started, he was saying something in an owner's conference, you have to have the wherewithal to run a business. And the wherewithal to run a business isn't a particular skill set or ability to close deals or be intuitive or hire people or have emotional intelligence. It's the wherewithal is the glue that holds it all together. All the little things and decisions and things I do and do and don't say, and motivation I give to people, and boundaries I give to people, and how I characterize things to my clients and staff, the demeanor, and also just the grit to keep remembering my mission, my desire to win. And so where he was, it was a brilliant statement, or maybe I just intuited brilliant things into it, but the wherewithal is really important. And I knew I did. I knew I did, despite all the natural doubts that were constant.
Yeah, and there can be so many. It reminds me of the story. I don't remember the exact story how it goes, but it's a story about like a young Native American kid with his wise grandfather, and essentially they were talking about, his grandfather was telling him about the two wolves, and there's these two wolves, and you know, one is filled with fear and this and that, and one is filled with courage, and the young kid goes, well, which one wins in the fight? And he goes, the one you feed. You know, and it's like the doubts are there. The reason why you can fail is always there and available. If you choose to mentally go down that hole, your mind will take you there. And if you choose, they're like different. It's like a fork in the road. Like either you can choose to go one way or you can choose to go the other way. And right. I'm so happy that you chose the right path. So speaking of choice, David,
I can't imagine what my life would be like if I hadn't made this decision. It's you hit on it. Best thing I ever did, but I would have been a fantasy to think I'd be sitting here today saying these things, and I can't imagine where I would be before. I realized I have to take some risks, and you don't get, you know, if you always do what you've always done, you always get what you've always got. And I that's what I was doing. So in the end, I had me to blame. That sounds harsh, but I needed to take actions, and I've never looked back since.
That's so cool. So how in the world did you end up in the senior care space? Because did you have any sort of experience in the corporate world? Like, how'd you land on that? Were you comparing it to other options? Like, tell us about that. I'm so curious.
It's a really good question. I came to it, well, my personal background in it, I've always had an interest in medicine and health and lifespan, being a tennis player and tennis coach, always gravitated to a lot. So I have a lot of medical knowledge, even though it's not, you know, I can tell you all about diseases, but I'm not a nurse. So I had a baseline of knowledge and I've always had an interest in that, but I didn't know what to do with it. It kind of just sat out there on its own for years. And then I was looking at the top 10 businesses for the 21st century, you know, stuff like that, and had some advice from my father, who's been successful and making, you know, big risk decisions and having them pay off. And he said, you know, you need to look at some things that, you know, you need to find a need and fill it. That's how you can be successful. That's all a business is. Take away all the complexity, is finding a need and filling it. And what do we have here? Well, we've got 10,000 people a day turning 65. We've got 20 million people that need care and 5 million caregivers, and it's only going to accelerate. So I realized, like, slowly, it seems like it should be more obvious, but it wasn't. I thought I'm probably slow, but putting together home care, a business model that's going to be growing, applying my skills somewhere that's going to be a natural fit. I'm a natural, you know, always was the team captain and, you know, things like that. I'm good at it being hopefully a motivational leader and stuff. But so the ability to own and lead, work in an industry where I understand healthcare, passion for my grandmother through what happened with her in her life. And it just all kind of came together into, oh my gosh, home care is number 3 in 10 or whatever it was. And wow, it was kind of like a light went off one day. And I was like, why didn't I figure that out? Okay, that was, of course, my negative interpretation. But oh my gosh, I found it. And I think a lot of people can do the same thing, but they've got to suffer through the process. And sometimes it is suffering, but it's also, if I view it as working out in the gym for that payoff, that's what the process is kind of like. You got to go to the gym and you got to work out on that snowy cold day and you're sore anyway and you ran out of Advil, but you got to go to the gym again. And that's like what it is. On some Sundays, I didn't want to do any more research. I was demoralized or frustrated or thought I thought I had made a terrible mistake. And it just, you go through these, I've never run a marathon, but I guess you go through these huge emotional swings during phases of a marathon too.
Well, I run Spartan races, as you can see there, not quite as long as a marathon. I'm actually training for a 6-mile one right now. And I hate running, you know, but I do it, to your point, to callous my mind and my emotions for the roller coaster of life and business. I mean, you know, just being a parent and being a business owner, it's, you got to be able to handle it. So to that point, all right, so you wind up realizing that there's this demand, and some of those stats that you threw out are insane. I didn't realize that some of those stats were what they were. So it definitely says there's a huge need in that space. So I have a couple questions, actually, which is, so you're talking about how you were going through your process and, you know, it was discouraging at times. How long did it take you to figure out to land on Caring Senior Service as the franchise that you chose? And what made you choose them out of all the options you had?
Great question. Do you mean when I decided to take the plunge and now it's where to take the plunge, or just the whole thing? I think that's what you mean.
Both.
Okay. It was probably 18 months from realizing I'm onto something to delay and questioning and starting to look, not knowing where to look, you know, and slowly gaining momentum with people and thinking and more clarification. I didn't really have any places I could really go other than poke around, and I'm a good researcher, you know, and that's what I did. As far as my franchise, couple great stories. They were the most helpful and accessible. They're in Texas, but when I called the franchise recruiter at 10 p.m., he'd answer the phone, and he'd sound happy to talk to me. And I know that that's how I sound with people at 10 p.m., and I'm not always happy they're calling. You know, you are, but you're not. You're in the middle of something else. They just had an attitude and an energy that was very positive. They were medium-sized. I went to Kenyon College and later Ohio State, and I realized that a mid-sized school is great because you're not too small to have no resources. You're not too big to, you're just a number. They really were able to be responsive and yet big enough to have a lot of tools and assets from it. During my confirmation day, before I made the final commitment, I'd looked at a couple major national competitors. I won't name them, but you can figure out who they are. They're on TV. I went down with them, and one of those competitors came back, called them with questions after spending a weekend in Atlanta with 20 of them, 20 potential franchisees and five of their executives, called them in, and they didn't know who I was. They said, who? And they looked on their list. First, they didn't remember me, and then they looked at their list, and I wasn't on. It was a huge kerfuffle, and I was just really turned me off. And that had me delay the whole thing.
Wow.
I was about to pull the trigger. Ultimately, they didn't have the territory I wanted. But going to what they call the confirmation day at Caring Senior Service, which is right before your final commitment, I was going to get in at 11 p.m. I couldn't get away any sooner to San Antonio from Columbus. And long story short, I was supposed to get in at 11. There was a big storm or something in Houston, and it was 3 hours late. I didn't get in till, I got in at 1:30, I think, 1:30 a.m. I thought, man, this is going to be a tough morning. And I walked out of the baggage claim, and there's the franchise guy waiting for me. And, you know, he met me at the airport. Not only did he pick me up at the airport, but he waited 2.5-3 hours to pick me up. And I thought, okay, this is not only the kind of company I want to be a part of as an owner or anyone else, but also this is how they're treating me like I would want to treat my clients, you know. And so that it was like, okay, maybe I'm really onto something here. The size, the way they treat me as a potential owner, and they're kind of living their mission through how they treat me too. A lot of things are intangible, and this was just, I've told him since then. He kind of laughed. He says, really? He'd never thought about it. He was just worried about getting me to the hotel and all that kind of stuff. So he was just doing it without even thinking about it, which only kind of further, you know. So yeah, that's kind of a good story you brought up. That's how I knew when it was the right one, and I kind of stopped a couple of others that were in the works when that happened.
Yeah, wow, that's a really cool story. And, you know, the culture is so important because, you know, you become a part, you're a part of the system, right? I mean, you are owning your own business, but you want to be a part of a brand that has similar values to you. And it's part of our process and our zero to profitable franchise system. We teach a lot of our clients how to do due diligence on choosing the right franchise. And often they're in a similar spot as you were, which is they've narrowed down through a process to, you know, a specific industry, right? Like you had narrowed down to, you know, senior care, and then they're looking at three or four brands that essentially do the same thing. And it's like, how do I make the decision?
They would argue with that characterization, but that's true. They're broadly the same. You know, is it Coldwell Banker or is it Remax? You know, but no, exactly right.
Yeah, yeah. So it's just interesting. What a cool way that you narrowed that down. So all right. So now you're 6-7 years into your business. You obviously made the right decision. Tell us a little bit more about your actual business, how it works, and like, how are you able to have grown it to what you have in the last 6 or 7 years? Because not everyone who opens a franchise, period, whether the type of one you're owning or not, winds up being in the top 25%. Why do you think you've been, you know, so successful?
I ask myself that all the time. I mean, I think it's, I have a strong background in sales and marketing as a marketing director. I learned early on, it's people don't care how much you know till they know how much you care. And that was the moniker of the first guy who started HER Realtors in Columbus, turned into one of the biggest national companies. And so when I started, I went to see over 400 home care companies, rehabs, hospices. I knew nothing about any of it. But I went in, I was able to make an authentic, honest impression introducing myself. I was playing the marketer too. And you know, went back 3, 4, 5, 6 times. And somehow I engendered enough trust in them that they were willing to take a chance on me. And they'd give me a referral. And I, you know, back at the office, of course, I'm madly recruiting and interviewing and trying to bring people online and get them background checks done and then having to staff it. I did the first 18 months by myself. And then now I have a full staff with 4 other senior managers. So I can be the owner. I'm still the marketing director because I really enjoy that role. And for some reason I'm good at it, I guess, by the results. But it was hard. It was very, you know, going from it took a lot of luck. But I read something along the way, you know, that I always felt like I was kind of specially blessed because whenever I'd get into a huge pinch, and I mean real pinches, whether it was staffing a case or having a timing of major bills, something always happened to save me. Something always came in. It was almost, and I've learned since that they say when you get out there and take risks, that the universe conspires to help you succeed. And it sounds silly, and I don't want it to sound like a rah-rah motivational speaker, but it's my lived experience. It really happened. And I always hate to say it because I feel like I'm jinxing myself or bragging, so I don't want to. But I mean, if for people who are thinking about it, and if all else is equal, you know, generally speaking, I'd say better to get over the doubts and do it unless there's some huge reason, you know, not to do it. Err on the side of action.
Hey, I hope you're enjoying the podcast episode so far. One of the most consistent things that we hear from people that reach out to us is that buying a franchise feels really confusing. There are so many options out there. It's a scary decision. They don't know how to vet or do the due diligence, really narrow down on the right franchise for them. And then they really feel alone in the process. You might be the only one in your family who's ever pursued buying a franchise or being an entrepreneur. Or maybe you've tried to start a side hustle before or other businesses like me. Like before franchising, I was not able to crack the code on entrepreneurship. I'd like to invite you to reach out and work with us. We've helped many clients buy franchises, get them profitable, or buy resale businesses that are thriving. I'm talking about highly profitable resales, great value. It's allowed many of our clients to actually quit their job right away and replace their income immediately. So if you want to work with me and my team on finding or buying a franchise, doing due diligence, vetting it, or resale, then go ahead and go to tarjohnson.com/consulting. And we're happy to see if we can help. All right, enjoy the rest of the episode.
You know, I love that. And it just really just builds on what you're talking about in terms of taking a leap of faith. And I'm a huge believer in that. And one of the things I talk about to our community is like, as an entrepreneur, you're going to need faith. And now, regardless of what your faith is, like in terms of spiritual beliefs, religious beliefs, but you need to be anchored in some sort of faith to be able to manage through this process and enjoy the journey and enjoy the ride, because it's true. It's some days it's like you're jumping off of a cliff, but I love the phrase of if you don't jump, you're guaranteed that your parachute will not open. If you stay on the side of the cliff, it will not open. That is guaranteed. So the only way it opens is by you jumping and trusting that it is going to open. It doesn't mean that it's not going to be terrifying.
Yeah, I mean, and this is not motivational speakers or you or me, you know, saying for some reason, hey, do this, rah, 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 rah. We're reflecting what actually happens for reasons we don't fully understand, whatever our faith is, or faith in spirit or religion or just in action and the universe. And yeah, but the good things happen. And even the bad things that happen help you get to the good thing. So it's just a whole new adventure. You're opening up a door and surely a roller coaster. But, you know, that's life. And if you're ready for something new, it's not that you're going to fail. It's are you going to lose faith? And because I don't think anybody who does this is going to necessarily fail if they just keep the faith truly and just go every day. Good things happen. Enjoy it. You know, for me, having, you know, being kind of a natural business owner, it's, you know, I've always been the organizer and stuff, if you think of it that way, and always not wanted to work for other people. I've always wanted to make my own decisions. Knowing healthcare, loving old people, and going with a business that, you know, you're filling a need that's only growing, those were the four elements. I'm like, okay, this is it. Took me a long time to get there, but I think my story is not so unusual. That's what happened.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting when you were talking about how it took you about 18 months or so to decide. We often hear that when people reach out, is that it takes them around a year or two to kind of figure out the franchise they want. Here's a crazy stat, and then I'll pivot from this because I want to continue talking about you. But the folks that we work with, on average, the ones that buy a franchise, I just finished doing all the data, 120 days from starting their work with us, they sign a franchise agreement as the average, which is pretty crazy. So, you know, it just shows when you're a part of a process, which that's why I love franchising as a whole, right? Because like if you would have started your own senior care business from scratch, you know, it might have been pretty hard for you to be as successful as you are without the system behind you, right?
There's no question. The system is everything. I was able to essentially buy a brand. I had to learn it and rep it, and they want people to do that. But it gave me, you know, 30 years of history of a successful program with a great care as a method that's been trademarked, and then have a support network. We pay a support fee. We can pick up the phone 24 hours a day and have people with they always have 127 years of experience in social work, healthcare, and home care. And we have a whole team of people to support us and answer any questions, as well as a massive amount of information available through the intranet. And that ties into their whole educational program, which is so. Yeah, without the franchise system, I wouldn't be able to continue to educate people to make them better caregivers. That's a big part of recruitment. So for me, the franchise system, I'm purchasing something. It's way less expensive than me doing it on my own. I would never do it, just personally. I'll start it up. You know, there's way too much to know.
Yeah. And so before we hit record for the episode, you were telling me about your travels and showing me some of the pictures and the places that you've been to and just balancing that as an entrepreneur. So I want to lead into that a little bit, but before we do, tell us about your team structure. I mean, you alluded to it and mentioned it before, but what does your team structure look like and your staffing that you have in place?
Great question. When we started, I did everything. That's the best way to go because you're the boss who's done all the jobs and you know all the jobs. And I know that I prefer somebody like that. So I think they like it that I have those skills. But the way we're structured is I'm the owner, hands-on owner. I'm also happen to be right now, just because I'm good at it, marketing director. But normally we'd have what's called a home care consultant out in the field, developing leads, building on my relationships. And I may have one in the next year. But the key to my office above beyond that is my agency director. She's in the office. She runs all the big picture. high trust. She's involved in everything. She's the off. She runs the office. Under her are the team of care managers, and we have three. One's an office focused, an admin focused, and one's a field focused. Field focused helps cover shifts. They do introductions of new caregivers, which we do on every case to get them oriented. Doing supervisor visits with both clients, families, and caregivers to see everybody's happy. And then the office person working on scheduling, background checks, making sure all the documentation, driver's licenses, insurance, you know, the myriad of things is done. But they're cross-trained. They can both do each other's jobs. But there's one. And then I have a separate person who handles my recruiting, handles our Indeed account. That's a whole full-time job in itself. We spend a lot of money on that. And you've got to know how the algorithms work, constantly be seeing what the return rate on ads is, how long to keep them up, when to repost, then contacting those people. We hire 1 in 30 that apply with us. So we've got to do a phone screening, and then maybe 5 or 6 of the 30 get an in-person interview. Then we'll probably hire one of them. So that's a whole wing just on its own.
Wow.
And then I have a personal assistant who's technically a care manager that is my marketing, my event coordinator. So I come up with a theme. We co-host an event. He does all the legwork. It's everything together, theme, things we need for it. And so it's nicely allocated.
Wow, that is an incredible team that you've built, and that just shows like what's possible in only 6-7 years. I think sometimes it's easy to think about the overwhelm of what could need to happen, but hey, you've obviously built an amazing team, which is really cool. What was it like getting through that first? You know, I think you said the first 18 months you pretty much did everything. So what was it like getting through that period, and how did you finally make that jump to, did it feel like it happened overnight, or is just kind of like a gradual progression?
how honest should I be here? It was tough. It was tough. I look back and say it's the best thing I hated and thought was a terrible thing. Because I learned every single job, not only how do you do it if you were hired for the job, but everything that can go wrong, every situation you're going to learn. So I became experienced in all of it. And it was painful because you're learning multiple, you know, you're learning HR mistakes and hiring mistakes while you're losing a referral that you got because you didn't communicate in a timely manner. You know, all these little mistakes that you make. But I got through it. I got better at it. And then I took a stab when I was out marketing. There was a lady who was the head receptionist at an STNA school, state-tested nurses aid school. And I went there marketing because we're looking for a good place to find caregivers. And ended up striking up a conversation. And within 3 weeks, I hired her as my first care manager because she had some experience with it. She was intelligent. She understood the industry, and I call her my starter care manager, because again, I had to go through four. Now I've got long term staff, but you also have to learn how to hire, what to look for, what you need. You just get better with experience. Again, you just keep doing it, and if I accept that I'm gonna mess up, I don't mind anymore. Of course, I mind because it's a huge inconvenience, but I'm not angry or self blaming. I'm like, okay, what are we gonna learn from this? And we all agree that, you know, next time we hire this care manager or this other person, that we're really going to know what to do. So you improve each time, and the needs change too. You know, the skill sets you might need for a job may change. But right now I've got staff that have been with me for 5 years, all, you know, right about, you know, 5 years plus, except for a couple positions that we've grown in the last couple of years. And we made a couple mistakes in that position. But again, I look back and it's like it wasn't a mistake. It was just learning.
Yeah. And it's like you have to look at it that way, or else if you don't look at it that way, it can crush you. It's like that phrase, either you win or you learn, but really failure right. is, yeah. It's like really a mirage, right? If you see it as failure, then it will be. But if you see it as learning, then you'll be able to improve upon it.
I would say if somebody's looking for a new adventure, if they're not ready to retire, they want a new adventure in a really fun industry that's challenging, but you're directly helping people every day, and you can see it. It's not just, well, it's vacuuming their floor better. That's great. It's you're helping them stay in their home and not give up their home of 40 years with their husband and go to assisted living in some strange place. As wonderful as assisted livings can be, you know, whatever the level the person is, helping them stay there, happy, healthy, and at home is the Caring Senior Service moniker, is just a life-changing, at least for me. That's my sweet spot, is coaching and helping people and having a business that does it. And you know, it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, yeah, that it is. It makes a difference when you're in a business that you have a strong conviction in like that. That's why I tell people, like, when people are like, oh, I heard this franchise, they can make a lot of money. And it's like, if you go in chasing the money, like, obviously the money is important. You have to support your family. You want to be financially successful. But seek a business that you have a strong belief or conviction in first. And people go, well, I want to be passionate about it. And I'm like, passion is fleeting. Passion is temporary. Don't chase passion. Because what you're passionate about today can literally, you may not be passionate about it a year from now.
Right.
So it's not that, like, you know, before you start the business, it's not that you're passionate about senior care, but you believe in it. You believe in the service, and then it makes a difference. And then over time, your passion grows because of your conviction and because of your belief. So yeah, I just wanted to say that because I hate when people are like, you can follow your passion.
Another important thing I think you really sparked some thinking here is that you really have to go with a franchise that fits your values. That, you know, Jeff Salter, who started our franchise, was 19 in Lubbock, Texas, I think, and started and realized this is a great service and had two or three offices. And he did everything. He started from scratch. And he, you know, he suffered through as a business owner and became very successful. And so how that manifests now is that he treats his franchisees with a huge amount of respect. These people have busted their tail and made huge investments. I put everything financially on the line to get started. And it's their business. And they need to enjoy the fruits of the labor of their business. But he doesn't lord over people with the franchise agreement. And of course, you know, you could be very, or enforce business hours, like one franchise, one of the big national chains, calls the office to see who's there until 5 p.m. And if they're not, they get warning letters and crazy stuff like that. That happens in the world all the time. You got to go with somebody who trusts that we want to run our own businesses and be successful. And if he knows we're upholding the mission and values, then he'll do everything to make sure you're treated as that business owner, even though technically in the franchise agreements, they have a lot of power over you. But good ones will never use that because they'll know it's in their best interest to just help you succeed. And I was lucky enough to go in with somebody that I my intuition told me that's how it would be, because I was terrified of going in somewhere and being controlled. And so finding a place that doesn't do that was important.
Yeah. I mean, it's so great that you were able to, it's so great that you had that experience with that other huge franchisor, right? About them not remembering who you were or that you were at confirmation day, because what an easy way to start to separate in order for you to be able to make your decision, right? Because there, unfortunately, there are some people that wind up buying franchises and they get into that sort of franchise where it's a very kind of it's like a dictatorship in terms of you have to do this and you have to follow this and you have to follow this. And so, yeah, that's awesome that you know, your brand they're just great with franchisees, which is important.
I was gonna say, yeah, and I'm not here at all to be. I love my franchise, but if there were things I would say it's just so important for people looking at it it has to be a personal connection and trust their intuition and look at the little things. Do they get back to you? Do they treat you respectfully? Do they answer your questions? Do they make time for you? Do they treat you as you'd want to be treated? You'd want to treat your clients. It's really that in those intangibles that are super important. And not to be negative about franchising, but the franchise agreements are very powerful things and you have to be careful you understand them. But you also have to have people in positions to enforce those that understand how to make successful entrepreneurs succeed is to have a framework, but let them run with it as long as they're obviously upholding all the values. And that's something you can only do if you really do your research and meet them and take time doing it. You can't just grab it out of a bag.
Yeah, no, you definitely can't. So how are you able to make time for travel, and how have you, like you said, hey, I took some vacations that maybe I shouldn't have been taking, but I feel like, you know, you can't live to work. And so how did you pull that off? What are the tips for folks that are, you know, entering into the entrepreneur world and are existing franchisees and they're in their business working all the time, never taking any quality time for themselves?
Well, first of all, I didn't do anything for 18 months. I busted my ass for 18 months, got a care manager in place, felt like I knew kind of what was happening, and had an opportunity to, well, to our owners conference in Cancun, which is a nice perk. All the owners get together. But I love ancient civilizations, and I thought, you know what? I can go see one of the seven new wonders of the world at Chichen Itza. Best friend agreed. We met. Went down. We spent 5 days touring the Yucatan, and you can get a private driver for nothing. It's not also super. You want to have someone who knows what they're doing. But it was just re-energizing and reaffirmed to me psychologically that, you know what, I'm successful now. I own a business. I'm in charge. I can make decisions. But there's never a good time. So you kind of have to, once you not do something silly like just take off on vacation, but once you get it, you can plan it and you can decide, I'm going to pull the trigger. And even if I lose a caregiver today, I'm going to go anyway. And I've never regretted it. I was showing you some of the pictures, you know, of my trips that I put up just since I started the business. And it reminds you of why you're working so hard. You want to enjoy the fruits of your business too. We're not just I think holistically speaking, you've got to have a balanced life in order to be a successful entrepreneur. And in my family and in society, being type A and you know, non-self-indulgent and all these things, looking down on taking time off. And I've gotten smarter and realized that things from my diet to getting enough sleep, it's okay for me to do that. And it's also okay for me to enjoy my friendships and relationships and grow as a human. And I look back and I think I would have made a huge mistake if I hadn't made these decisions to go. And you know what? I had zero disasters happen except having to do payroll on the floor of the Houston airport, like I was telling you about when I was stuck there for 30 hours. And now that's become a story. So it's just, you know, I had to have a leap of faith that the trip would work too. So I guess I never think of myself as super faithful, but I guess I've shown a lot of good faith in the past 7 years, and things work out. And you know, it's just got to believe, you know, do your due diligence and work hard, but believe. I guess that's what I'd tell somebody.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, that's solid advice. Do your due diligence and believe. Yeah, 100%. Cool, man. Well, I was going to ask you to close, like, what if you were to give a piece of advice to two different segments? One person who's, you know, wants to own a franchise, they still don't yet, and then because that we have a bunch of those that watch, uh-huh. And then we have franchisees that watch too. So, one piece of advice for franchise buyers, one piece of advice for franchisees. What would you say?
Franchise buyers, I'd say, this is a good opportunity. I say this lightly, but it's a good opportunity for character development in buying a franchise, because when you find yourself going in circles, procrastinating, hand-wringing with worry, getting frustrated, I did that in other areas of my life too. I realized I'm just recreating this in the franchise buying process. So take action. What's holding you back? Figure it out. Move forward. And you know, circling the drain, I call it, forever, is just, at some point, that's not a good idea. You've got to figure out what the block is and move ahead. And 9 times out of 10, it's just it's not a reason not to do it. It's an old mental block or defense mechanism or something that you. So character development in the sense that you got to figure yourself out and decide to move forward. Current franchisees, I think people, you know, I have to thank current franchisees for being my mentors, for being people who I had to realize that 95% of the terrible problems I was having, you know, on a given day and hiring or something, that they happen to everybody. It was the best thing I ever learned from my fellow franchisees in the company and elsewhere, to learn I have to thank them and for helping me get to where I am, and realize that we're all having the same issues and problems, and you become more trusting and more. So it's just a big way to grow as a person. And so I wouldn't have so much advice for franchisees as to thank them for helping the newbies come along. It's kind of like I own a Subaru. It's kind of like owning a Subaru. It's kind of weird. You get out, it's kind of creepy almost. You get out in the parking lot and you see the person with the Forester, and I have the Outback, and you start talking about your cars in the parking lot. You've never even met them. And it happens all the time. So same with franchisees. I think we see each other as in the same club. And I think that the current franchisees, just encouraging them to not forget where they came from and to help that person coming up who was really just you in another body, you know, to succeed. And I try to do that.
Yeah, that's awesome. And do you have a network of franchisees outside of the brand you're in now? Or are you just connecting mostly with the franchisees in your brand? Or how does that work?
Well, a lot of people in my social circle and family mostly own their own business. That's another test. If your friends own businesses and you've worked for small businesses, you probably need to own one. It's one sign. You probably have all kinds of things, but that's one sign. And that was always me, and I always kind of knew it, but I didn't know how to do it. But anyway, that's something. I mainly network with, you know, I have Teams calls with my other owners that I've gotten to be close with on a regular basis, talk to them on a regular basis. 4 times a year, we all meet in person in one place. So it's really, I'm really tightly connected. As much as I want to be with them and also the senior people of the company. In our franchise, the owners and VPs still own their own offices. So these people, there's no ivory tower.
Wow.
There's no ivory tower. These people are dealing with the same problem I am. And sure, I know people who own some other franchises as acquaintances, but I wouldn't say, maybe I should be, but you know, I wouldn't say I'm that close with them, certainly on a let's go have lunch basis, but not really, you know, sharing a lot of deep things with them.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. David, awesome, man. Thanks for coming on. I really, really enjoyed this conversation. So, thanks for sharing all of your insights, your journey, your story. And look forward to doing part two at some point.
It's ongoing. And Tarek, I want to thank you. I'm not sure if your service existed 7 years ago, but if it did, I didn't find it. And there was a real lack of resources or encouragement or people to help somebody in the stage I was in. And I'm happy to see that it looks like today that's not the case anymore. So thanks for the opportunity. It's ongoing. And I'd love to come back one day.
Awesome. Sounds great. All right. Thanks, David.
Take care. Bye.